Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast, your Seattle Seahawks podcast by 12s for 12s. With your hosts, Adam Emmert.
You know what you do when life gives you lemons? You don't make lemonade. You kick life in the balls and you demand it gives you something better, like bacon.
Bacon's delicious.
And Brandon Schultz.
If you want to put your money toward helping this team win, buy a ticket to the game on Sunday and bring your adult voice and scream your adult brains out. That will make 10 times more the difference.
Go Hawks!
Be on a quest to own the West.
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz, and joining me, my good buddy Adam Emmert.
How you doing today, Brandon?
Hey, I want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving. It's here. It's that time of year.
It is at that time of year where you try to figure out a good excuse to avoid the family. And with the little mini blizzard we had yesterday, all set.
You're all
like,
set.
Congratulations. You're not going to have to go up to Kalispell. So I'm happy about that. So it should be, it was good.
I just need to make an excuse to go to the store and find pairs of pants that will allow me to expand a little bit over the next few weeks.
Oh, you're going big this holiday then.
Well, it's the time of year for it. I mean, if you aren't eating food between Thanksgiving and Christmas, then really what time of year aren't you going to eat food?
Oh, see, I thought the goal was to eat the food on Thanksgiving and on Christmas, and then you just do what you do in between.
No, normal. It's a marathon.
Oh, no, I've been doing it wrong apparently, though. Yeah. But then again, I'm not into the holiday things. But you know what I am into, Brandon, is wins. And we had a win this week, and I'm so much happier to come on the pod this week and talk about a win, even if it is against the lowly Niners.
Winning makes everything better, and when you can take that one last bit of hope, when you can see the hope drawn from a team's soul, it makes everything better.
Yeah, we definitely stole the Niners' cookie, just like I hoped we would, and with a dominating win. For the most part, I mean, there's some defensive lapses there for a couple series, but I mean, you're not going to stop them every single series. But they got a little bit back into the game at one point there, and I think we all had our worries. I know I did.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things I want to talk about this week is, do we really feel better about this team after this game?
We'll talk about that. We'll for sure talk about Thomas Rawls. Adam,
the Rawling Ball.
Yeah, the Rawling Ball. I've heard some other nicknames too. There, people are definitely looking to give him a nickname, and we have
it's
to figure
time.
Out one. And then a guy that Thomas Rawls overshadowed a little bit, rookie Tyler Lockett. Lockett's mm-hmm. going to get his recognition in this show. We aren't going to let that pass by. And then we're going to talk about Marshawn Lynch's status. Not good news.
Well, no, not the greatest. That's for sure. But you know, he needs to do what he needs to do to get healthy, and hopefully the timetable that we're talking about here is good for a potential playoff run. That would be good.
And the Seahawks' red zone performance, we'll talk about that, as well as their offensive line a little bit, starting to maybe look a little bit better, and we'll get into that as well. So,
and some Steeler talk. I mean, we got the Pittsburgh Steelers up next this coming
the
Sunday.
The Steelers are coming up, and it'll be important to talk about how we feel about this team going into a matchup with the Steelers. Two winning teams have come into CenturyLink the last three games that they've played, and the Seahawks have yet to come away with a win against one of those winning teams. Steelers, it'll be time to turn it around against them.
Yeah, for sure. Two teams that are fighting for their playoff lives here a little bit. And so expect a motivated Pittsburgh team, I'd imagine. And one of those matchups we don't see very often. So this is a team that we're not very familiar with as fans. And hopefully we can give you a little insight into some of the things the Steelers do and how we think the Hawks can have some success.
So the Seahawks now 5-5 on the year. They get the win, the 29-13 win over the 3-7 San Francisco 49ers. Let's go through the game, Adam, and talk about what happened and why the Seahawks came out on top this game.
Well, I think to start with, they came out on fire on the first couple drives, scoring touchdowns, and really playing well from the get-go, especially in the run game. We saw Thomas Rawls do his thing, and it's starting to become, I mean, it's a trend now. I mean, this is the fourth time he's done it, and we all know a third time's a trend. So, I mean, fourth time, I mean, this might be who he is. So that was encouraging to see. You saw the offensive line come together and play a little more cohesively. Russell Wilson not having to do quite as many Russell Wilson things to be productive in the pass game. And as a result, oh my Lord, he just seemed to happen to have his best game.
One of the things I thought was really important for this team was you saw the defense get penalized on the very first drive by the 49ers. And you start to think, oh, here we go. We're going to allow them to extend drives. But instead, I think Michael Bennett needs to take a piece out of Cliff Averill's playbook. Averill gets called for the neutral zone infraction on third and eight. And that's not a down you want to be getting penalties. But they come back on third and three. And Cliff Averill gets the sack. Sacks Blaine Gabbert for 7 yards.
Third and three. Line to the far side is Quentin Patton. There's a shotgun snap. Four-man rush. Gabbert steps up in the pocket. He's going to go down. First pass of the game, and Gabbert hits the deck. It's Cliff Averill with his first sack of the game, and that's 5.5 sacks for him on the season.
Yeah, he was all over Blaine Gabbert all night. And give Blaine Gabbert some credit, though. He avoided some pressure as well. He could really run a lot better than I had ever known about. I didn't realize he was that kind of athlete. So,
Michael Bennett knows what
there.
Kind of athlete he is now, doesn't he?
Yeah, he ended up taking a face plant at some point in the game. I mean, Turf Monster got him a little bit.
I'll say that too. Turf Monster got Bennett on that one.
So you can't be too hard on him there. But he played actually a pretty fine game. When you talk about Blaine Gabbert, they couldn't get anything going on the ground for the most part. Really shut them down in the running game, and that was to be expected with. Being on their backup running back now with Carlos Hyde being down. Mm-hmm. And the Niners are what they are at this point. They're a team that's more or less devoid of talent. And when your best receiver is Anquan Boldin with one hamstring, I mean, this is the type of performance you're going to get. And so I don't know how much that you can get out of this other than the fact that the rookies came and balled out. I mean, we'll get into Thomas Rawls, but let's talk Tyler Lockett a little bit, because that's one thing that I know we wanted to touch on, Brandon, because I don't know that he got a lot of love this week. Two touchdown catches, had four receptions for 48 yards. You know, just a difference maker in the offense this week.
Yeah, definitely. Let's talk about that, because the very first score of the game on first and 10 at the San Francisco 24, Russell Wilson airs it out for Tyler Lockett in the end zone.
Russell out of the shotgun with three receivers near side. Here comes the blitz by the Niners. A throw downfield. Tyler Lockett makes the catch at the goal line. He is in. Touchdown, Seahawks. What a beautiful opening drive. A 24-yard strike over the shoulder to Tyler Lockett. And the Seahawks are on the board. The opening drive of the game, six plays, three passes, three runs. It couldn't be any more balanced than that.
And that was a cool play. Obviously, I was excited about that just because, but I will say I was a little more subdued as a fan in this game. Like, I mean, I was kind of like, if we win, great. It's just at this point in the season with the way things have gone, but I was excited. But a beautiful ball by Russell. And you saw one of the things I noticed on that play is Jimmy Graham having an effect on that play, being lined up in the slot on the other side of the field, held the single high safety in the middle of the field, allowing single coverage for Lockett on that play. And there's the Jimmy Graham effect right there. That's one of the reasons why you trade draft picks in Max Unger to bring him in.
Tyler Lockett, the only guy in the league right now with a kickoff return, a punt return, and now he also has three touchdown catches.
Yeah, and that's an impact player. I mean, you don't see wide receivers come into the league as rookies and have big impact years usually. It usually takes them a year or two. I mean, just think Golden Tate. There's a great example right there. It took him a couple years to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Talented athlete, a good receiver, but it took him a little while. And you see Tyler Lockett fitting right in as that third receiver and really being the third option in the passing attack behind Graham and Doug Baldwin at this point. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jermaine Kearse is really the fourth option at this point. And I think that's a credit to John Schneider in going out and identifying him as being a wide receiver talent in the draft and not just a return man.
And credit to Tyler Lockett for the amount of work that he's putting into it too, because from all accounts, he's one of those guys that shows up and works really hard at what he does. And part of the reason why you don't see a lot of rookies perform in their rookie year is because how difficult it is to learn a playbook and adjust to the level of play that the difference between the college game and the NFL. Now, you talked about how pretty that pass was on the first touchdown pass, Adam. But how about that 11-yard pass inside the red zone on 3rd and 10? Russell Wilson slings it to Tyler Lockett, and he bounces off a few tacklers, goes over a few guys, and into the end zone for the touchdown.
A trip set to the near side with Jackson in the backfield. Russell takes the snap, looks inside, throws, ball's caught by Lockett, breaks one tackle. He's still moving. He's driving, and he's in. Touchdown, Seahawks! The rookie bullet out of Kansas State, Tyler Lockett, his second touchdown on the day, an 11-yard reception, and he had to fight through two defenders to get there.
The Seahawks up 20-0 at that point, Adam.
And that was awesome to see. I really enjoyed your comment after that you had made. You know, just a question really, is Tyler Lockett the more physical receiver or Jimmy Graham at that point? And I mean, that's a fair question after that. I mean, it looks like Lockett has a little more want to in that area of the game. I mean, to put his head down and to really bowl his way forward and not be denied in the end zone there. And that's an example of finish when we've talked about, you know, this team making those extra plays and then also converting in the red zone. I mean, what, 4 for 4 in this game, Brandon?
3 for 4. Yeah, I think technically that first touchdown was just outside the red zone, but three for three, but 100% in the red zone.
That's been a huge bugaboo for them up to this point in the season. They were one of the last teams in the league when it came to red zone percentage, and that's where you really make your money. And between red zone and third down, 8 for 14 on third down, converting 57% of them. That's a very high percentage. Keeps your offense on the field and allows you to get a rhythm. In that way, you wear down the defense in the end, and you see a guy like Thomas Rawls pile up 200-odd-some yards.
Well, yeah, and let me correct myself, too. I guess 2 for 2 inside the red zone. I was thinking that, you know, the 24-yard one touchdown strike, that kind of counted, but it was the 31-yard touchdown pass to Thomas Rawls that was the other score outside the 20-yard line.
And that's one thing that we haven't talked a lot about, right, is Thomas Rawls and his catching ability. He set the tone early in the game with a sideline catch as well, where it was difficult catch to make on a little wheel route, takes it up the sidelines, and, you know, like he said, he may have thought he was going out of bounds, but he just didn't know any better because he put his head down in a la beast mode and just planted Brock on that play, made him look stupid, and really got the team fired up.
Russell out of the shotgun takes the snap. Four-man rush. Rawls makes the catch over his shoulder, up the left side, near sideline, bounces off a man, fights through all the way down to the 30-yard line. Thomas Rawls, we saw it against Cincinnati. He will just knock people down, and that time he knocked Jermaine Brock right on his wallet.
And that's one of those things that you would get from beast mode. That was one of the reasons he is the heartbeat of this team, is that toughness. And Thomas Rawls has that mentality as well, and that is extremely encouraging.
Well, it helps when you have a guy that looks up to Marshawn Lynch in the way he does. And a guy, I was reading an article, I think it was the Seattle Times, it might have been Jason Jenks that wrote it, but looked at the number of times Thomas Rawls has carried the ball, and not a single one of them has he gone out of bounds on his own will. It's always been somebody else pushing him out of bounds.
Look, I love it. I love that mentality. When you're a running back, that's exactly who you ought to be. I've never understood the scat back that runs out of bounds, or even, I mean, think of Sean Alexander a lot of times, and we would all wonder why he wasn't quite as physical as you think he would be for his size. Mm-hmm. And here's a guy who's, you know, not exactly tall. I mean, he's about the same weight as Marshawn, but man, he's got a toughness to him. And I thought one thing that was interesting was they asked Pete Carroll on Brock and Salk who they think he can compares to. And he was very hesitant, I'll say, to make this comparison. Mm-hmm. But eventually he spit out the name Earl Campbell, a guy that had some burst, but also some amazing toughness and really bowled over guys. And he kind of threw that out there just to kind of give Thomas a little something to shoot for there, you know, something to aim for.
A guy far before Thomas Rawls' time, but clearly a name that everyone recognizes and being one of the all-time running backs.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we all think of that play where he just plants his helmet in the middle of that Rams player and that pops. You say Earl Campbell, bonk, that's the image right there. Like, you can't even get it out of your head. And These are the types of plays that Thomas Rawls is making. Now, the other thing about it, the other half of it, is the burst. And I think that's something that we saw in this game where he'll take a 3-4 yard gain, make a quick little cut, and he can accelerate so quickly and has that little extra burst, maybe a little extra gear that Marshawn doesn't have at this point in his career.
Well, one thing we know about Thomas Rawls is, despite the amount of playing time that he's had, I believe he's leading the league, or he's very close to leading the league in yards per attempt. And part of the reason why is it seems like the offensive line blocks better for Thomas Rawls than they had for Marshawn Lynch this year. It doesn't seem like he's getting the contact in the backfield that we've seen Marshawn Lynch run into.
Well, I know that's how it looks if you look just purely at the numbers, but let's just take this last game for an example and compare it to the Cardinals game when Marshawn played. Now, those first four possessions that the Seahawks had the ball, what happened? Penalty, 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 penalty. Three and out, three and out, three and out. You can't get a rhythm. You can't string together a few different run plays. You never establish that ground game. And what happened in this game is they established a ground game early. They were converting on third downs. They had sustained drives. And as you run the ball more, what you saw early with Thomas was, because the number was 4 yards before contact, first contact for Thomas Rawls in this game. But early in the game, it was 1 to 2 yards before first contact. He was getting hit fairly early, about the same as Marshawn. So it's not that the offensive line was blocking better for him right out of the gate. It's that they had so many more opportunities because they ran the ball 44 times. But by the end of the game, it's 8-9 yards before he's getting contacted. And when that averages all out, comes out to 4 yards per game. And it seems like they block better for him in the end. It's just Marshawn's never had a chance to get going this entire year because we get down and then you're ended up throwing the ball a lot and you just don't get the opportunities. The offensive line doesn't establish its will.
Well, it helps when you score on your very first drive of the game. That really is, it seems very important to the Seahawks' success is getting that touchdown on the board right away to start the game. And then they can start hitting a team with a running game. And the other thing that we saw in this game too, the 49ers, man, missed tackles all over the place. That was helping Rawls out. And whether or not it was Rawls making them miss or it was just them not having the want to take him down, they were missing a lot of tackles.
Yeah, they're not good at the tackling thing. And you think they would be with their coach coming from the defensive side of the ball, apparently. But obviously not something that they've emphasized enough, or they don't have the talent.
Well, we talked about it coming into the game. This week, they were in the top half of the NFL in stopping the run.
I think part of that problem is, Brandon, is they'd never even heard of this Thomas Rawls character.
I'm going to get to that later, Adam.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I think Thomas Rawls is the greatest back since Todd Gurley, which we all know was the greatest back to ever play the game.
He was anointed earlier this season as the greatest back in the NFL, right?
I think in about the same amount of games, about four games, and he's the greatest back in the league. Jim Brown doesn't have crap on him, all this, like, just a joke. And but Thomas Rawls definitely has established himself now as a guy who has some potential. Let's see what he does long term. And so for all those people that are ready to supplant beast mode right now for the rest of his career with Thomas Rawls, let's pump the brakes a little bit here. It's been four games. Beast mode did it for 4 years.
Yeah, no, and I think we were ready just a couple years back even with Robert Turbin and Kristen Michael to be the guys to take over for Marshawn Lynch, and now both those guys are not on the team anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Or at least hopeful that they could do it. I think we've seen so much more out of Thomas Rawls at this point than we ever did in Kristen Michael, right, Brandon?
That's for sure.
How much more? How does that compare?
Well, Thomas Rawls in this last game had 209 yards rushing. He had a total of 255 yards from scrimmage. Kristen Michael, in his entire career with the Seahawks, 254 yards rushing. Thomas Rawls, from scrimmage, just on Sunday, had one more yard than Kristen Michael did rushing in his entire career with the Seahawks. I mean, a two-year career, but still.
One guy a second-round draft pick, the other guy an undrafted free agent.
Yeah, I don't even want to look at the offensive linemen that were in the draft after the Seahawks picked Kristen Michael. I'm not going to look. I,
I haven't looked because I like myself, and I don't want to feel bad about any of that, because yeah, that feels like a wasted pick these days. But at least they hit on this year's second round pick and Tyler Lockett having a big game.
Third round pick.
Well, I guess he was third round, and Frank Clark was second round. Yeah, you know, one guy we haven't talked much about so far is Doug Baldwin, leading receiver on the day, and you know, making a big play down the stretch on a bubble screen, and surprisingly. Bubble screens worked in this game.
Second and 10 from his own 48. Here comes the blitz again. Quick throw far side to Doug Baldwin. Looks for some running room. Stretches the field. Turns upfield on the sidelines. He's still going inside the 40. Down to the 35-yard line. And Doug Baldwin quick afoot all the way down inside the San Francisco 35. No, they'll spot it now at the 36-yard line where Ward made the play. A 21-yard gain.
Baldwin he seems to thrive on those passes, trying to make guys miss, and he's a guy that'll put his shoulder down and be physical too. So when you have guys like Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin, scrappy little guys, they seem to be the guys, and maybe it's because they do have to work so hard just to stay in the league that they're going to be a guy that's going to be physical when they need to be.
Oh, absolutely. And Doug was super physical on that last bubble screen that he caught, breaking two or three tackles, picking up the first down, you know, six receptions for 60 yards. Big day for him. Now, I know he did hurt his ankle towards the end of the game. I haven't heard anything about that, which makes me believe that, you know, we're probably okay there.
Yeah, Carroll said today that he'll be ready to go on Sunday.
Perfect, because we're gonna need him for sure. We're going to need him for sure. Yeah, just a great day by the offense overall, piling up 500-odd-some yards. Obviously, their best performance. You know, one thing I thought that was interesting is watching the passing game get on track is one of the ways that they've helped themselves in pass protection is you saw it on the second play of the game even. It's a passing play, and they pull a guard in pass protection to kind of mimic a run play, and it did throw off the linebackers a bit. They bite a little harder on the play action. And with the way that they communicated up front, they were able to pass guys off and give Russell a little bit of time, along with the linebackers being sucked up, and it really created some lanes for Russell to throw to. I think it's a neat little wrinkle. Now, they're not doing it a ton, but here and there, you'll see them do that. They got very creative with some of those things, and bringing Jimmy Graham off backside to block on passing downs. Like, you know, they would motion him, let's say, to the left side of the formation, and then he would scoot right to pass block throughout the play and pile him and Luke Wilson up on the same side to block at the same time too, kind of combined to maybe make one good blocker. Like, I don't know, but it seemed to work.
Well, and when you talk about pulling guards, we can talk about what that means. That means you're taking a guard out of his normal blocking assignment and you're moving to somewhere else where he generally wouldn't be blocking on a particular pass play. And then it's up to the offensive lineman's responsibility to shift appropriately to pick up that guy's blocker, and to that way all the guys are being blocked, right?
Right. And particularly on run plays, when they pull a guard, like let's say it's the right guard, he'll take a step backwards, run behind the line a little bit to the left side as more of a lead blocker just in front of the running back, almost as if he's a fullback. And a lot of times on running plays, they'll leave whoever the guard was originally supposed to block or lined up in front of, they'll leave him even unblocked to a degree. Because they're running away from that defender anyway. But in the pass game, you do have to shift the protections around a little bit, and they did a good job at that. They really did. And a lot of double teams on the defensive tackles as well to keep the pressure from coming up the middle. And if they can do that, that makes a big difference for Russell in the end. And you saw him be more patient in the pocket and just and make some good throws that way. Very efficient game from him. Offensively, not a lot to be upset about when it's all said and done. This was the type of team that we hoped to see going into this, other than the fact that Jimmy wasn't super involved in the passing game. Three receptions for 39 yards. I know a lot of people are kind of up in arms about that with the targets thing again.
Are they? I don't know. I don't feel
like I know.
There.
I know some people are. And the thing is that, look, first touchdown to Tyler Lockett, Jimmy Graham held the safety in the middle of the field. Second touchdown to Tyler Lockett, he drew the safety with him a little bit too, made the safety backpedal into the end zone. So by the time Tyler got to the end zone, that safety was waiting for him at the goal line instead of waiting for him at the three or the four. Mm-hmm. And so Tyler was able to score because of the effect Jimmy Graham had on the coverage. And I think That is the value of him. It doesn't. I don't give a crap how many times he gets targeted. This isn't fantasy freaking football. Like, I what I care about is if we win and if his effect on the field is overall a winning effect on the team.
And to me, this was one of his more effective games. You talk about he only had three catches for 39 yards. But like you said, on the two touchdowns, he was a big factor. And then blocking in the run game, he was a factor. It stood out to me how well he blocked in this game.
He played a very good game blocking when it came to the running game. And, you know, not always pancaking guys or really moving them around, but very much keeping them in their spot and or sealing them off by moving his body left or right to try to seal them into the inside edge of the play so that Thomas Rawls could get outside. And I think he did a really good job at doing that day. And that was encouraging to see. And I hope that he can build on that because the run game is where it all starts and stops with this team. And I just hats off to Jimmy in this game. A fine performance all the way around. Maybe his best all-around game as a Seahawk.
Well, I mentioned Cliff Averill to start the show, Adam, and we haven't really talked about defense yet, but Cliff mm-hmm. Averill was one guy that really stood out to me in this game. Bobby Wagner, 8 tackles, 3 solo tackles, a pass defense. You know, he had a solid game. One guy that didn't have a solid game, though, Kerry Williams.
Benched
in this game.
Sit down, son. Yeah, we're putting in a guy who's no better, no worse. So maybe just to send a message, because Shed didn't fare an ounce better.
Well, the difference was instead of getting beat by Vance McDonald, he was getting beat by Anquan Boldin. So there's a little bit of a difference, I guess.
Look, on the one long reception to Anquan Boldin, it is not fair to get all over Kerry Williams on that one. He was put in a bind by the route combination, and they were playing zone defense, and there really wasn't great communication between the guys that was playing underneath the route that was to the inside of him and then him trying to stay kind of in between McDonald and the receiver that was running inside. And really, at that point, I would hope Earl would be able to recognize that and get over the top to help out with that. He was put in a no-win situation on that play, and he didn't win. So, I looked a lot at the secondary struggles in this game because they had, about 3 drives where it just seemed like they were just getting chewed up, mm-hmm. and especially by tight ends yet again and all that. And really what it boils down to me, is they do fine when they play man-to-man, whether that's with the linebackers or nickel corner, whatever it is. When they're playing man-to-man, they really play some sticky coverage for the most part. You know, you'll get beat now and then by a good route or whatever, but overall, they play pretty well. Where they consistently get beat as a unit is in zone. And it's really bad. And to me, it's more on the linebackers and Cam when I'm going back and rewatching the game. I don't see Cam Chancellor making the quick reads in zone coverage. I see the linebackers not taking deep enough drops in their zones. And you get that little pocket behind them that we seem to get burned on in the seams time and time again. And to me, it's on slow recognition by the linebackers and Cam Chancellor at this point and zone coverage.
Well, you mentioned the couple long drives that the 49ers had, and up 20-0, the 49ers get the ball. Just a minute and so to go before halftime, and they drive down the field. A minute 40 left, and they drive down the field and get a touchdown to Vance McDonald right before halftime. They go into the half just down 20-7. And at that point, you're a little bit worried. Not necessarily worried, because at that point, yeah, they hadn't done anything up until that point. You don't see it. You don't like to see the team give up drives like that right before halftime, and especially, you know, on a 19-yard touchdown when you're kind of hoping for a field goal to hold them at that point.
Oh, at the very least, and to get, I believe, wasn't that the drive they gave up a 2nd and 16 at one point?
They had a 2nd and 11, a 3rd and 7. And a 3rd and 1.
Okay. Then it was on one of the field goal drives. They also gave up a 2nd and 16. It was ugly. What I can't understand is when you know they're going to throw the ball,
mm-hmm.
How it suddenly becomes more difficult for them to cover. Like, that makes the opposite of sense to me. And I can't quite figure that out for the life of me. And I think part of it is you see a lot of coaches when it comes to the end of half or something like that, they play soft zone coverage.
Yeah.
And it's really what the Seahawks do the worst. And I don't understand why, look, with Kerry Williams, his strength is his strength in playing press coverage man-to-man up at the line of scrimmage. And I see both him and Sherman being lined up quite a ways off the receivers too many times. Now, Sherman gets up in the grill of the receiver more than Kerry does, but I'm tired of seeing that. Like, if we're going to draft these big corners and we're going to be a physical secondary, the Legion of Boom, then let's lay the boom and let's dictate to them. I don't understand all this soft coverage. I don't know if that's a Rashard thing or something they're trying differently or why they're playing so much zone, but it's stupid. I'm sick of it.
I think it's a Carroll thing because it doesn't seem to matter who the defensive coordinator is for the Seahawks as to the type of coverage they play in those situations. And to me, I understand it to a certain extent that you don't want to get beat by the big play in those certain situations. But for as often as they seem to give up points by playing soft, they end up getting scores anyway. So why not play more aggressive and just accept that you might get beat once in a while and know that you're going to win more times than you aren't?
Well, my question is, what was working up until that point?
Right.
And now you're going to do something different? Like, I understand situational football, but
understand the situations when you're good and when you're not.
Yeah, that's an amazing point. That's exactly right. And that's the thing that drives me the most crazy about this. And I really hope that there's a change in philosophy on that going down the stretch, because look, the linebackers in the underneath coverage is not good enough. The nickel coverage and linebacker coverage is not good enough when we try to play that style of defense. I'm fine playing the three deep up top and trying to prevent the deep play there, but let's play a lot more man underneath. I want to see a lot more of that.
Well, you talk about coming out after halftime, the Seahawks up 20-7. They go three and out right at a halftime. And then the 49ers, they get a field goal. And then the Seahawks respond with a field goal of their own. And then the 49ers come back and with another field goal. That was the drive where on 2nd and 16, they give up the deep pass to Anquan Boldin. And fortunately, the Seahawks, you know, Richard Sherman, able to push the running back out of bounds on a 3rd and goal. And they end up coming out just 7 yards short of the end zone there and are forced to kick a field goal. But at that point, you know, the game's within reach for the 49ers at 23-13.
Oh, so maddening. So maddening. I mean, all of us, I believe, I mean, I know I was. I was like, are we seriously against this team at home? I mean, we can't do this. But then you saw the Seahawks come out and, you know, put the nail in the coffin late in the game and really go for it and score late in the game with that Thomas Rawls 31-yard touchdown and reception and finally close. And that made me feel great. And part of the reason they were able to do it was Russell Wilson was truly amazing against the blitz in this game.
Yeah, he was. He was unstoppable against the blitz in this game. I think he completed every single pass. And
I think it was 11 for 11.
11 yeah. for 11 in this game. And completion percentage overall in this game, over 80%. I think he had three passes that he threw out of bounds, one drop by Curse, and then I think there was another miss. And those were his only misses in the entire game.
It's amazing he has a great game when he gets good pass protection, huh?
Yeah.
And then I watched the Monday night game with Tom Brady and the Bills all over him. I mean, he was getting hit on almost every single play, right? And what kind of numbers does he put up? Russell Wilson type passing numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just, look, it's, I don't care how good you are. You need some protection up front to be a productive player. And any of the struggles that Russell Wilson has had this season, it's not because he's dating a pop star. It's not because he's in too many commercials. It's because he's been running for his freaking life and having to do Russell Wilson things. And now that you see it come together over the last couple games, he's played a lot better.
I was going to say, Adam, it sounded an awful lot like you were comparing celebrity quarterbacks.
Exactly. And we'll talk about that more later in the podcast, too, because there's some ridiculousness there.
All right. Well, one thing that we haven't hit on, Adam, was special teams. And Steve Money Hauschka missing two extra point attempts. Now, is this a case of something going wrong, or have field goal kickers been given a quota amongst the field goal kicker union to miss a certain number of extra points throughout the regular season?
To level the playing field between all kickers so everybody gets a good contract?
Everybody has to make their quota.
Right.
Everybody can kind of feel good about themselves. Nobody gets, you know, too far down.
Well, maybe. I mean, I hadn't heard this conspiracy theory before, but I wasn't aware of the kickers union either, specifically. So there's that, apparently.
It's a conspiracy I just made up, and it needs to be perpetuated.
Look, I'm fine with Hauschka missing field goals when it's a game that the Seahawks more or less control throughout. But if this next week coming up against the Steelers, he's going to need to be on because it's going to be all hands on deck.
That's a good point. And I've kind of heard similar accounts of the crowd noise in CenturyLink against the 49ers. And again, I think that's a situation where you got to save up that energy for the following week. You know, it's like on defense. You know, you maybe take some plays off but you know you're going to be ready for the next time.
No, you never take a play off. Who takes a play off? What kind of 12 are you? No. You show up for every play of every game and you scream your guts out. There's no taking plays off. This isn't high school. This isn't college, son. This is a pros. You need to go out there and play like a professional. You need to cheer like a professional. There are no games off. Plus, us as fans, we only have to go to eight of them. Like, only half of them. You get half the games off already. Don't give me this.
You get a week to recover, too. So that's...
Yeah.
You got a whole week to recover. If guys are taking plays off in games, that's totally different.
Drink some nano bubbles. You know, get right. Do whatever it is you got to do. What a joke.
I wasn't there, but it sounded pretty loud throughout the first half. I just wonder if in that second half, when it looked like the Seahawks had pretty much put it away, if that was the case.
Maybe. I don't know. It's really difficult to tell on TV. So it's true. Hard telling not knowing is where I'd put that, I guess. So.
We'll go with that.
Yeah.
Well, what do you say we get into this matchup with the Steelers, Adam?
Okay.
you're that excited about it? Well,
I'm not nervous about it, man.
Should we talk about how we feel after the 49ers win? Because I asked you last week, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
I asked you what it would take to see from the Seahawks team to feel good about a win and to feel good about this team after a win. And I'm not getting the vibe that you're feeling all that great.
I just watched that defense have some of the same struggles that it's had throughout the season. I mean, look, the Cardinals game, it wasn't offense that was the problem. Scored 32 points.
Mm-hmm.
It was defense. And I'll tell you something. I mean, I'm no rocket surgeon here, but Blaine Gabbert isn't Ben Roethlisberger.
No.
You know what I'm getting at? And Torrey Smith isn't Antonio Brown. Mm-hmm. And so when I see the defense have struggles in the secondary again against a woeful unit and one of your starters get benched in the middle of the game, I'm worried. That concerns me very much.
There's one that you missed too, Adam. Vance McDonald is not Heath Miller.
You know, I think Heath Miller at this point in his career is living a little off a reputation, and he's not a guy they target a ton. I think he's league average, maybe, you know, maybe slightly below average. He's no game beater. I mean, Greg Olsen's a heck of a lot better tight end than he is at this point.
But he's a heck of a target for Roethlisberger. He's that guy that Roethlisberger looks for in certain situations when he knows he needs to come up with a catch. He's still that guy.
He looks to Antonio Brown far more often than he looks to Heath Miller.
Well, that's because all he has to do is throw it up in the air in the direction of Antonio Brown, and Antonio Brown's going to come down with it and get yards after the catch almost every time.
Well, and it's yards after the catch. See, that's the thing. I mean, we all think of Antonio Brown as this big deep threat, but really he does a lot of his damage in short, intermediate routes. And it's not just running slants and things like that inside. It's running outs and hooks to the outside. He runs everything on the route tree, and he runs it really, really well. So that's a matchup that can be concerning. Now, what I really hope is that you see Sherman shadow Antonio Brown all game, much like he did Torrey Smith in this last game. Now, we've seen him do that against Torrey Smith in both games, and then we saw in the Cardinals game him not do it with Larry Fitzgerald. So I'm not exactly sure when the Seahawks decide that that's what they need to do, but I really hope to see that against Antonio Brown. He is easily their number one weapon and what makes that offense go.
I looked at every game that Roethlisberger has played this year. Only one time has he thrown for less than 300 yards, except in the one Rams game where he was injured. And then he threw for over 260 yards in the one game against the Bengals that the Steelers didn't throw or didn't get a whole lot of points. But in every other game, Roethlisberger is slinging all over the yard. When you go from playing against Carson Palmer and Cam Newton and quarterbacks who have come into CenturyLink the last two games before the 49ers and come away with wins in the fourth quarter, it kind of makes you worried when that's the exact same type of offense it feels like the Steelers have, the ability to make those big plays.
Yeah, it really is. And look, one thing that the Seahawks need to be prepared for this week is the no huddle. I mean, that is something that the Steelers are going to early and often, and something that we haven't seen a lot of this year. We haven't played a lot of up-tempo offenses in the no huddle. And really, in the past, when they have, they've done well. But then again, we're sitting there in the Cardinals game saying, well, we've shut down all these guys in the past, too. So it's hard to hang your hat on that to some degree. You know, one of the keys to success for the Seahawks, I think, against Big Ben is he's really good when you bring pressure from the outside, Cliff Averill. But when you don't bring much up the middle, he's able to step up and do those little pirouettes and shake guys off and do those things and then find guys on the second play a lot like Russell Wilson does. So what I really hope is we see a big game from either Jordan Hill or Brandon Mebane or Ataba Rubin. Yeah, some of those guys in the middle are going to have to get pressure up the middle, and that's when Big Ben struggles the most is when you pressure him straight up the middle.
Well, and two, one of the things looking at Ben Roethlisberger this year, he's had a little bit of trouble when you blitz him. When just looking at his numbers, when he isn't blitzed, he has more than 10 yards per attempt. And that's huge.
That's huge.
And yeah. 106 quarterback rating. Yet when you blitz him, his yards per attempt goes down to 5. It cuts in half when you blitz Ben Roethlisberger. He only has 257 yards and a quarterback rating under 70. So we've seen Chris Richard dial up blitzes in certain situations a little bit more than his predecessors at defensive coordinator. It'll be interesting to see if he turns it up, especially with Roethlisberger. This is his first time, Adam, his first time playing at CenturyLink Field.
Kind of like Tom Brady a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When he came in, what was that, 2012?
Yeah,
and that was
Russell Wilson's first year.
Yeah, first time ever in his career. And you know, look, what I really hope to see is the blitz come from Bobby a lot up the middle. Their center, Wallace, not good. I mean, with Pouncey going down early in the year, he's rated abysmally. And I think that's a place that they could have some success. Now, both their guards have played real well. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting. So I look for Richard to bring a little pressure up the middle, but understand that we're going to be in nickel a lot throughout the game because the Steelers play three wide almost all the time. Right. I mean, it's probably their favorite personnel grouping.
Well, yeah, so, because the personnel that they have, it suits them well.
Yeah, it does. Now, that makes you wonder, so what are we doing then with Kerry Williams this week? And how, because we're thin at corner. Now, fortunately, we get Jeremy Lane back this week, and I think that could help.
It could. It's tough to rely on that, though, when it's a guy's first game coming back off of a really devastating injury.
So this is what I think, what I hope they do. I hope Sherman just follows Antonio Brown anywhere across the field and does his best to play to a draw there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we put Jeremy Lane outside on Martavius Bryant, okay, who all he does, he is Torrey Smith dos.
Right.
That's all he does is run nine
go
outs.
Deep.
It's just go deep. Just run straight, run fast. And you watched him just abuse the Cleveland secondary doing that last week. And if there's one thing Jeremy Lang can do, he can run. Yeah. And he may not be the biggest guy, but he can run. And so I'd like to see Jeremy Lane on the outside paired up with him. And then at that point, you know, you got Kerry Williams or Deshaun Shedd or whoever it is that you want to put up against Wheaton, who's so-so. He's not a game breaker. He's a guy that's going to catch a couple balls on your shirt with as much as they throw it. Mm-hmm. Because this isn't the Steelers of the past. I mean, this isn't, run the football, play tough defense. This is a team that really just airs it out. It's all Big Ben and the no huddle and trying to control the tempo.
They're going to get their yards in the passing game because they do have Antonio Brown. Ben Roethlisberger is going to link up with Martavis Bryant at least once in the game. To me, a big part of this game is going to be stopping D'Angelo Williams early. And he's a guy who's had some success this year filling in behind Le'Veon Bell. And whether or not they can continue to stop the run, because they did it against the 49ers. They did it against the Cardinals. And, outside of one really long scoring play at the end of the game. But up to that point, they did pretty well at stopping the run. And to me, it's ultimately going to come down to who can score in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think the run game for the Steelers is very important, much like you said. I mean, they're sixth in the league as far as running the ball, so they've had success doing it that way. Surprisingly, only 13th in the passing game, but then again, that's with Vic and Landry, so yeah, that's a little bit...
Yeah, those guys brought the numbers down a little bit.
Yeah, Landry Jones. So like, I just think that those are, kind of sneaky statistics there, but they can get after the ball and run it a little bit. So it'll be... It's going to be that interior of the defensive line is going to be huge for the team this game. And I really am interested to see that. Now, the other way you can defend this offense is to keep them off the field. And so as much as we're talking about the run game for the Steelers, it's even more so important for the Seahawks with Thomas Rawls making yet another start. This is going to be huge because the Steelers are horrible against the pass, but they're pretty darn good against the run.
Right.
And if we can establish the run game, that'll be huge for the team going down the stretch, because one way you can keep those quick strike offenses off the field is to keep long sustained drives. And then when they do get on the field, if you can shut them down for a couple three and outs, suddenly you have the momentum, you have all the time of possession, you're tiring down the defense, and you are dictating the game at that point. And I think that'll be huge.
Right. And even if you aren't getting those big chunks of yards in the run game, what's important is that if you run it on first down, you run it on second down, you get into those manageable third down situations to where Russell Wilson can then attack the Steelers defense on the pass and pick up short third downs rather than having to go, third and 10, third and 12. And especially in situations if they get penalized. Those are the types of things that can really stop the Seahawks offense. And so even if the run game isn't quite there initially, I would at least like to see them, getting small bits of yards so they can get those manageable third downs.
I think this is going to be a huge Jimmy Graham game because...
We keep wondering when that's going to be. Well, we had one, right?
Mm-hmm. I think this is another one. Steelers are awful covering tight ends. I mean, they have some of the same struggles that the Seahawks do in that manner. And their linebackers are abysmal in coverage, as well as their slot corner. They usually run Gay inside as the slot corner, and he hasn't been good in coverage all year either. So I saw in just their last game against Cleveland, Barnage tear them up. And really, it's that middle of the field, just like we talk about the Seahawks all the time, behind the linebackers, in front of the safeties, especially in zone coverage. It's the same thing. This is an opportunity for Russell Wilson to really do some damage there. And that's what's great about that part of the field is that's the part of the field that's generally available against the blitz. Mm-hmm. And Pittsburgh still does blitz quite a bit like they used to back in the Blitzburg days. And if he can exploit that and be good against the blitz like he was last week and build upon that, maybe they can use the pass to then set up the run game a little bit more. And I think that could be huge for the team.
So ultimately, I think it comes down to just, again, the fourth quarter and the mentality of this team. Fortunately, we've seen them perform in the last few weeks, at least better than they did earlier in the season, where they're actually, you know, take it, for example, this last game against the 49ers. The Seahawks had the ball for 10 minutes in the fourth quarter. It's that kind of being able to finish in that way that makes an incredible difference than when your defense is on the field for 10 minutes and allowing teams to score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter.
Oh, big time. And one of the ways that they can do that and be sustaining in the fourth quarter is not run a bubble screen, because Brian Deathridge on the Facebook was this last week was like, what's going on here? Is there a tear in the space-time continuum? Like, these bubble screens are working. And the thing is, Steelers will have none of that. They are great against the bubble screen. They crush those things. So that's not going to work this week. So let's stay away from that. And hopefully we've established a running game and we're starting to cram it down their throat by the time the fourth quarter runs around. If we can see about another 35 to 40 carries out of our running backs this game, that's a good sign when it's all said and done.
Well, maybe that's what this bubble screen frenzy was for in the game against the 49ers. Just now we're setting the Steelers up with some tape, and now Russell Wilson's going to fake the bubble screen and then go deep to Jimmy.
I think that maybe Pete Carroll said, all right, Daryl, you've got one game to get all the bubble screens out of your system. And once you've done that, then we're good. Yeah, exactly.
After week 12, no more bubble screens.
That's, no more bubble screens.
For the rest of the season.
Yeah, we'll be done with that. Thank you. But should be a good game. I kind of predict a shootout, a close game. I think this is going to be a high-scoring affair. And let's just hope the offense can keep on clicking.
Yeah, and it's exciting. I'm excited to see more Thomas Rawls. You know, Marshawn Lynch, it sounds like he's going to be out for 4 weeks now.
Let's talk about abdominal surgery.
It's a bummer, but at the same time, it's also still could be season-ending surgery for Marshawn Lynch. But after a few weeks, let's see where he's at, and hopefully he's ready to go for the last couple games of the season.
I really hope he gets well quickly. As much as I love Thomas Rawls, I am not ready to bury beast mode and to just move on. He's still the best running back on this team, people.
Yeah.
He is. He's Marshawn freaking Lynch, okay? Just don't forget that. And it's a bummer that he's been so nicked up this year. Maybe that is a bit of a result of getting up there with age. But when he has played, he has looked the exact same as he always has. And I expect that when we see him come back later on in the season, and hopefully it's in time for a playoff push. I would really like us to be doing that.
Yes, and that reminds me, the ESPN playoff generator is out now, so that's always fun to play with. I saw people figuring out a way for the Seahawks to still get the number one seed in the NFC, and so that's fun to do because it's not going to happen. Carolina's not going to lose the final six games to make that happen, but you know, it's fun to live in those types of universes.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great way to waste hours upon a time. See, if you're single, these are the things that you do. These are the little gifts that ESPN gives you to keep you from crying when you're trying to keep yourself warm at night.
I don't think you have to be single to enjoy that, Adam.
Or you just need to be avoiding your wife.
I'll spend time on the ESPN playoff generator. Well,
I didn't know that you'd have time after the Fallout 4 came out. I knew that was a big deal to you.
It's tearing me in a couple different ways now that the playoff generator's out. This gives me the idea of, because there's a big matchup, and we talked a little bit about it in our All 32 Picks and IPA show, Adam, but there's the matchup between the Vikings and the Falcons this week. And with those two teams in contention for the wild card, they're kind of the ones that, and that's, I think, of all the games on the schedule this week, that's the one Seahawks fans are pointing to the most and saying, which way am I really supposed to root in this particular game?
You know, I don't know that I can tell you one way or the other. I feel like the Vikings are the more competent team when it comes to going down the stretch. I feel like their schedule is much more difficult than the Falcons is. So there's a part of me that thinks, well, the Falcons are kind of prone to lose a few more games going down the stretch on their own. So if the Vikings can go down, you know, a couple times randomly, that would be great. But I don't know that it matters. I think at the end of the day, a loss for it, you're gifted a loss, but for one of your competitors, one way or the other, mm-hmm. for a wild card spot, just be happy.
Just be happy.
Yeah.
Well, so to me, I think it does make a huge difference because. And the difference is, if we've kind of resigned the Seahawks to the fact that they're likely not going to win the division, if the Cardinals stay healthy at this point, they're going to be able to rack up enough wins to win the division at this point. Mm-hmm. Then the Seahawks are playing for a wild card, and that number five seed becomes really, really important because the number five seed plays the number four seed, and you know who's getting the number four seed? It's whoever comes out of the NFC East. And mm-hmm. and there's four teams that could potentially have that spot. Washington could get that spot. New York could get that spot. Dallas, Philadelphia, every single one of those teams. And if you're the number five seed going up on the road against one of those teams, I don't think any of those teams are scary home teams.
No, not at all. So what you're thinking is that the Vikings, with having more wins at this point in the season, have them lose and knock their record down just a little bit more? Is that what you're hoping for?
I think it makes the number five seed more attainable for the Seahawks, especially when the Seahawks play the Vikings.
Yeah, yeah. And so you have that advantage. And then the Vikings have a relatively difficult schedule going down the stretch, too. So, I mean, they're prone to lose some games, too. That's just the thing. Like, to root for one or the other, I mean, what if the Falcons suddenly got hot and you're like, I wish the Falcons would have lost that game at that point. You know, like, it's so hard to say. Yeah. I mean, either way, as long as you take care of your own business, you'll gain ground on one of the two of them. And you're right about that number five seed, though, man. I mean, that would be the best consolation prize that you could get to not winning the division.
Right. And because the thing that concerns me is that Carolina is likely going to get the number one seed. The Cardinals probably going to get the number two seed if they keep winning,
mm-hmm.
which means the number three seed would go to Green Bay, and if they keep winning in their division. And you don't want to play in Lambeau in January.
No, but again, who the hell knows? I mean, I hate speculating.
Early.
I hate speculating on the playoffs this early. I mean, there's so much that can happen.
Yeah.
So much. I mean, you got another, what, 5 weeks of football?
Right.
There's a lot, or, you know, depending on how, 6 weeks if you're counting this week. That's a lot of football to play.
Yeah,
that's
the Buccaneers could come out of nowhere. The Falcons could be nowhere to be found come the end of the year, and you might be looking at, yeah, a team that you didn't even expect in the wild card position.
Yeah, I mean, if you love playing the what-if game, get on the wild card generator, have yourself a night. You know,
there you
get yourself a six pack. Have a good day.
Well, I wanted to have a discussion about it just so people would have an idea that they'd make an educated guess as to who they might root for. I'm rooting for the Falcons.
Just don't root for it. Well, root for a tie. I mean, if you really want to root for for a tie.
I'm a little bit concerned about the tie, Adam, because we do play the Vikings, and a tie could come back to haunt us if we end up beating the Vikings and hold the tiebreaker over them. And then say they end up getting the same number of wins as the Seahawks do by virtue of them having fewer losses, then the tiebreaker wouldn't even come into play.
Yeah. Whatever happens, happens. You
there
know,
you
like, just win your games. Win your games.
All right, Adam. Well, what do you say we come back and we do a little bit of Better Life and do better?
I like it.
And we're back. This is the Seahawkers Podcast. We want you to get involved with the show. You can send us an email at gohawks@seahawkerspodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter @SeahawkersPod or on Facebook, facebook.com/SeahawkersPodcast.
Right on, man. Yeah, definitely get that in. We like hearing from you guys and all that good stuff. Did we have any reviews this week as well, Brandon?
I haven't looked at the reviews yet. If we do, I'll hold them off for next week. I do have some emails, though. And if folks want to call in, you can also call, leave us a voicemail at 253-235-9041.
Yeah, yeah, that's still available, even though nobody seems to use it because you're a bunch of slackers and are scared.
Apparently.
You're scaredy cats.
Clearly.
Yeah. I'm going a different tack this week. I thought maybe I'd try to shame somebody into
doing
it.
I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Because right. The other way, not working. And
no,
when
no,
things aren't
being
working,
warm and inviting apparently isn't enough. No, saying that you're a coward, maybe that'll get you there.
Coaches find out that people respond differently to different tactics. So
right,
I appreciate
right.
the different approach.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Well, getting into email, this first one is from Ethan in Vancouver.
Nice.
My wife and I just got back from our game at the Clink yesterday. It was a great experience. We got there a couple hours early and just enjoyed soaking in the atmosphere. Lawyer Malloy was signing autographs, and I got a very awkward white guy handshake, man hug, fist bump thing. Man, I'm smooth. It was awesome getting to watch Rawls make some history. If this kid just isn't just a flash in the pan, cough, Matthews, then we are in good hands if Marshawn is ready to hang him up. I'm disappointed to say that the crowd was not what I thought it would be. See, this is where I heard it from. As far as my wife and I were concerned, we had a ticket for a spot to stand in. Apparently, everyone around us wanted to enjoy their seat. It was awful quiet in there much of the game and half empty, but mid fourth quarter. I know it's the Gabbert-led Niners, and the outcome wasn't ever seriously in doubt, but the 12s need to do better.
All right. Well, there's a firsthand account there. And if you're getting a little too in love with your seat, you're not doing it right. And again, no games off.
No games off. The seat, it will be there when the team is on offense. You can use it then.
Totally.
Otherwise, just pretend the seat, it doesn't exist.
Yeah. I mean, what are you, Santa Clara fans? Come on.
Exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They sit through the whole game.
We have a standard.
This next one's from Amrit in West Seattle. Hey guys, thanks for slogging through this season with the 12s. It's been ugly. My husband has a theory about the Seahawks this year. Disclaimer, he's a Packers fan. He said we used up all our luck and disturbed the chi of the football universe in the last NFC championship, and ever since then we've been paying for it. He says 8 things went improbably right for us that day, and I guess now 8 things have to go improbably wrong. Number one was the Super Bowl, and we've had at least 5 more this year. I hope we don't have to live through 2 more blown leads to get right with the universe. Or maybe God is mad at Wilson. Give him some credit for a win that was just dumb luck. All my lucky gear and places to watch on game day aren't working. This feels broken. Come on, Seahawks, let's do this. If we don't beat the 49ers, I'm going to need to medicate myself to even watch another game. Go Hawks. And obviously she sent that in before the 49ers game.
You know what I don't want to hear about from Packer fan is all the luck this franchise has had, the Seahawks. You had Brett Favre, and now you get Aaron Rodgers. Boo freaking who. You know how many franchises go forever without a franchise quarterback, and you get 2 of the best in a row? Cry me a stinking river. And 8 things went right for us, sure, in the NFC Championship game. But the Super Bowl loss, that's worth all 8 of them. All right? We don't need 7 more things to go wrong to even that
catfish
out. All right? Like, we're talking, that was as heartbreaking as it gets. We're even in football karma, people. So you can tell your little Packer friend or Packer fan husband to take his theory and light it on fire, because I'm tired of it. I don't like it.
No, and, you know...
But I appreciate her sharing it.
Yeah, and what I would say to her husband, if I were her, is just say that, hey, I'll live with that tremendous victory over the Packers and have that win and remember that for the rest of my life and accept those 8 plays that come after it, because that one game, that improbable comeback, was entirely worth it.
I hope that that couple had a really great bet between the 2 of them for that game that he had to pay up on. I hope they put something, you know, that was worth it on the line. Like that's what you have to do when it's high stakes like that.
That's
so,
true for a shot at the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this one's from Kiki in Edinburgh. Normally, I download my Seahawkers podcast immediately, but not this week, and this came in after the Cardinals game again.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to admit that I couldn't face reliving that Sunday night game against the Cardinals. It broke my heart and put me into such a decline. Losing at home in this way was just gut-wrenching. I'm still working my way through the 5 stages of grief. I felt so good about this matchup, I wanted to block it from my memory, so I guess I'm still stuck on denial. denial is not just a river in Africa. So I put my big girl pants on and tuned in, and I'm really glad I did it. It was cathartic, sharing frustrations with the amount of penalties we gave up, raging at the LOB, and Adam making me feel normal when he out-meltdowns me. So thank you, Adam and Brandon, for not shying away from what needs to be said, facing the matchup against the Niners with a bit more optimism. I mean, it's the Niners. Surely nothing left to say other than go Hawks. Like, seriously, go! All the way through the game without throwing it away in the fourth quarter. Guess I'm not ready to hit stage 5 acceptance just yet. This season isn't over. Thanks, Kiki.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm glad my personality flaws make you feel more like a normal human being. That's what I'm here for. But I'm also glad that that entire show was helpful for them, you know, kind of working through a tough loss. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think that we've taken upon ourselves, Brandon, is to be sort of that voice and just like, it's going to be okay. Everybody gives each other a hug.
Yeah.
And somehow, well, as long as we stick together, we're going to be all right.
Yeah, we it takes a little bit for us to get through the podcast, but knowing that it's helping folks out there get through tough losses like that too, it does make it worth it.
It does.
All right, what do you say we get into some do better?
All right. So my do better this week is, well, it's for a few people, but I'm going to go with this guy, Scott Pulasic, from Bleacher Report.
Yeah,
but he's kind of the he's kind of the guy. I don't know if you ever did this as a kid, Brandon, but like, you know, you're walking with one of your friends near an electric fence and you grab their hand and then you grab the electric fence and they're the one that gets shocked. It's a really good time. So it's the person at the end of the line that gets shocked, right?
Right.
So that's why he is my do better, because he just happens to be the person at the end of the line. But everybody else who's along this chain of events is equally as culpable, and they should all do better as well. So,
and I'm joking about hating him. I don't know who he is, but
I don't either.
Know more.
But I understand it, you know, just where he's coming from at this point. So he publishes that stupid, idiotic article on Bleacher Report about the Seahawks being concerned that Russell Wilson is becoming too much of a celebrity quarterback. Like, Tom Brady isn't a celebrity. Like, Aaron Rodgers isn't a celebrity. Like, Cam Newton isn't a celebrity. Are you serious? I mean, Tom Brady is dating freaking Giselle, all right? And he dated Bridget Moynihan before that. Yet somehow everything was fine. But you're going to make up that this is somehow an issue. But the worst part is the way that this whole thing is sourced. And we hate garbage journalism, Brandon.
We do.
Like,
that's true.
We can't stand it. And this is what garbage this journalism is. This report from, what's this dude's name? Scott, is a report on a report filed by Ryan Glassbeagle, another reporter for The Big Lead, which quoted a tweet from another reporter, Evan Silva, that quoted Mortensen ESPN, who quoted anonymous freaking sources within the organization that they had concerns Russell Wilson is a celebrity quarterback. One reporter reporting on another reporter's report of a tweet of another reporter's anonymous quote. That is the worst. That is the worst game of journalism telephone I've ever heard of in my life. I mean, and you know, in the game of telephone, when it's told at one end, it comes out completely wrong on the other. This is garbage from start to finish, and Scott happens to be the one at the end of the line. He's getting shocked here. You suck at journalism. Do better.
Well, the worst thing is that you're quoting a guy at the start of the line who sucks at journalism. Chris Mortensen was the guy that started the whole Deflategate fiasco in the first place, quoting the league office, or the officials had discovered that 11 of the 12 balls were deflated, and that ended up not being the case. And that was Chris Mortensen that reported that.
You know what these guys are doing? They want to be celebrity reporters. Like, that's what they're trying to become, because by putting Russell Wilson's name in an article and Ciara's name in an article, you know what that just became? Clickbait. And that's all that is, just to gain clicks to increase your name so you're a little bit more of a celebrity in the NFL reporting world. And it's garbage. I can't stand people slandering somebody else's reputation just to get ahead like that. And it just, I can't stand it, and this guy sucks.
Yeah, Bobby Wagner addressed that too, and just the idea that it's garbage and made up, and that when people can't find a way to explain a player's poor play on the field in any one particular game, they go to off the field. And I blame you a little bit, Adam, for last week going to that way for the Seahawks secondary. So I got to call you out the same.
You know what the big difference is there, Brandon? I didn't say I knew that somehow within the organization, everybody was concerned that Richard Sherman had a baby and Earl got married and like rah, rah, rah. I was just saying, I don't know. I'm out of answers. Maybe that's it. Like, there's a big difference between that and saying, Seahawks are concerned that Russell Wilson's becoming a celebrity quarterback, instead of saying, oh, well, looks like he's struggling because his offensive line is
catfish
and Swiss cheese. Like,
journalism, you know what I mean? And fan speculation are two very different things. That's
complete.
As if we do this much longer, Adam, you know, we're coming up on 100 episodes. It could be before long that Bleacher Report writers start writing reports based on what you say and quoting you as some sort of inside source. And then at that point, you've become a distraction to the team.
Look, if anybody ever takes us seriously as media, you need to do better too. Okay.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, on to my do better, Adam, and mine is for the 49ers coaching staff and a couple of the players on that 49ers defense. You know, you talked about earlier, Adam, how the 49ers didn't necessarily even know who Thomas Rawls was. That's because they didn't. Coming into this game, Eli Harold was asked about Thomas Rawls. He's the 49ers outside linebacker, and Eli Harold was quoted as saying, I didn't really know about him until today. He definitely earned his check. He didn't know about him. You didn't know about the one guy who you're going to be playing against. Look, Adam and I knew that Blaine Gabbert was going to be the quarterback. We knew that Drone, whatever his first name is, he was going to be the running back for the 49ers coming into this game. We
at least knew one of his names.
The last one, the one that's on his jersey. That's the important one, right? I want to say Shane, but I can't be for sure. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I'm not the one that's matching up against him on game day. And
it's not your full-time job to know these things?
It's not my full-time job to know who the third string 49ers running back is that the Seahawks are going to go up against. I just know his name starts with D. That's all. And I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. So the thing is that it wasn't just one guy either. It wasn't Eli Harold. It was also Eric Reed. He was quoted as saying, when you hear Marshawn is down, the immediate thought is that we have the advantage here, Reed said. In my own mind, I'm thinking we make them one-dimensional, we stop the run, and force them to throw the ball. But give credit to Rawls, he came out and performed, whether it's because he's a great running back or we just missed a ton of assignments. It is what it is. So here you have another guy that even though they know that Marshawn Lynch isn't right, They think that all of a sudden, even though Thomas Rawls coming into this game had, I think, at least 3 100-yard rushing performances, isn't this his fourth one now? You don't prepare for a guy that you know can run the ball and you just think that everything's going to be okay. It's a big reason why they lost the game, because their defense wasn't prepared enough to go up against Thomas Rawls. And if I'm Blaine Gabbert and I'm hearing this from my defense, that they didn't even know who the guy is, who they were preparing for on game day, you just made my job a heck of a lot harder. And I put together a pretty good day if I'm Blaine Gabbert, a quarterback rating near 100. So for the 49ers defense, I'm glad you didn't prepare. It was better for our deal, but you know, for your deal going forward, this is going to get your coach fired toward the end of the season. So do better.
And this is why you're 3-7.
That's why you're 3-7, and we took
when
your
you
hope.
Can't even be bothered to prepare for somebody that you know you're going to play against. I mean, the news was out; Marshawn was injured. I mean, he heard Eric Reed say it, and this goes. This is on Tom Sula. Like, how did the guys not get a scouting report? How was this not talked about in one team meeting? Look, This is if I'm Jed York, first off, I'd do a lot of things differently because I'm smarter than him. but the other thing I would do is I would fire Tom Sula after this season. This is the nail in the coffin.
This is a one and done year, I think.
When you hear a team is that underprepared that they haven't even heard of the starting running back of the team they're about to defend. Wow.
Or at least has the second most rushing yardage on the team. Like, maybe they think Marshawn could have a chance at playing. But this is a guy who's they have three legitimate runners on the team. They have Russell Wilson, Thomas Rawls, and Marshawn Lynch. And if you are an opposing defense coming into the game and you don't know those three guys, and you're playing a team that prides itself on wanting to dominate in the run game, then you have problems. And clearly
yeah,
the 49ers do.
Ugh.
All right.
But it's funny.
I'll take it. I'll take it, and I'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, on to Better Life and my Better Life this weekend, Adam. Mm-hmm. We've talked about John Oliver before and how much we enjoy some of his reports. And this week it was a football topic, Adam. And you can't watch football on game day now, right, without seeing these FanDuel commercials, these one-day fantasy sports betting commercials. They go on throughout the game. I've never been one to really get into. I like fantasy football, but I'm not one to really put money down on it. And even though, and actually being in Montana, we're actually one of the states that's exempt from being able to play FanDuel because Montana actually recognizes it as betting, whereas like there's 46 other states that don't. And part of the reason why this bugs me so much, and I go back to a book that I read by, it was the author of that movie 21, Ben Mezrich, and he wrote the book called Straight Flush, the true story of six college friends who dealt their way to $1 billion online poker empire and how it all came crashing down. And the interesting about this book, Adam, now these six college friends went to the University of Montana. And they,
oh, go Grizz!
Yeah, and they got the idea. This was shortly after the internet kind of became prevalent, and they saw this opportunity by playing poker at a bar in Missoula to make poker a thing online. And they started seeing these companies come up online, and so they got into it because it wasn't yet illegal to do it. And so they created the website and they started making a ton of money. And then in 2006, it was the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act of 2006 that put these guys, these Montana college students, kind of out of business in online poker. They had to move out of the country. And now there's one guy living on an island out that can't come back to the United States because he's essentially wanted and they're going to put him in jail. And to me, so it was that act that specifically excluded fantasy sports if it met certain requirements. They excluded it from that act, even though skill game, whether it's skill game like poker or a skill game like the FanDuel folks would say that theirs is based on a skill game. They're both very much skill games, yet it's because it has an exclusion in this law that it's so prevalent now. And I want to thank John Oliver for bringing it up and really having a strong opinion on it and kind of bringing to light just how ridiculous it is that it's considered so different from a game like poker and when it's almost the exact same thing.
Yeah, better at life than Skip Bayless, that John Oliver. He does a good job of bringing a lot of the things to light. One of the things I liked in his report, they had a clip from Joe Namath being interviewed on some talk show, and they asked him if it was gambling. He said, well, do they pay to play? And they're like, yeah. Like, do they win something or do they get money if they win? He's like, yeah. Well, then it's gambling.
Yeah.
Well, if Joe Namath, the guy who can't decide whether or not it's appropriate to kiss Susie Colbert on the sidelines, is got the sense and reason enough to understand that this is gambling and nobody else seems to, like, something's seriously wrong here, Holmes. And I think that it is gambling. But on the other hand, too, it's like we're all adults here, too. Like, you know, do whatever it is that turns you crank. And I mean,
no, yeah, if people want to do it, I mean, if they have the spare income to do it and that makes football interesting on Sunday and they want to do it, I don't have anything against that. It's sure. just the idea of the differentiating
saturation.
The saturation bothers me, and how they try so hard to make it out to not appear like gambling when, just like I go back to the poker thing. If you're so skilled at being able to run the numbers that some of those poker players are, that they know what their chances are winning based on the cards that they have in their hand and the cards that they're seeing, and they know the probability down to the, you know, tenth of a percentage point based on those types of things, that's what makes it a game of skill, because they have that ability to memorize it, just like anybody with that's really skilled at putting together spreadsheets on likelihoods of, you know, if it's raining at CenturyLink, is Russell Wilson more likely to have a 200-yard passing game versus a 300-yard passing game, and, you know, going up against a defense that tends to play a lot more man coverage than zone, you know, how do all those numbers work together and play out to where they can pick the guys that they think are going to perform the best? And that's what it comes down to. When you play the games, you're playing against people that they know all those statistics, and they can run the numbers, and they know the likelihoods, and that's why they win more than your average person that's just guessing.
Sure. And it's still gambling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, right?
That's what I'm saying. It's okay if people want to do it.
Just call a spade a spade.
Just know what it is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I'm with you there. That was a cool little report. He does a lot of good reports, so agree with you there. Well, my better at life this week, it's a little sad, but, you know, for an NFC West rival, something that we don't do a lot of, but reports came out here just today that Stedman Bailey, wide receiver for the St. Louis Rams, shot in the head in Miami on Tuesday, and he's been through surgery. They're saying that so far, doing well, and they're very optimistic. And the thing is, you know, a lot of times you'd be like, well, what was he doing? You know, no. He's in a car with some buddies at 8:40 in the evening. It's not like he was out at 2 a.m. or anything. Mm-hmm. Car pulls up next to him and, you know, shoots up the car. A couple of his friends were hit as well. Sounds like they're going to make it. But, you know, just Stedman Bailey, I mean, he wasn't out doing anything crazy or anything like that. Just a pure victim in this, from what we can tell at this point. And the fact that he survived, I mean, I don't know too many people that can get shot in the head and pretty much shake it off. But that's more or less what he's done to this point.
Wow.
And I'm rooting for the man. And so this week, get better, Stedman. And you are better at life than Skip Bayless.
Thoughts and prayers with him. Hopefully a quick recovery. You don't want to see a guy in that situation, nope. And you hope he gets back on the field as soon as possible.
Absolutely. So, didn't want to end it on a downer, I guess, but, you know, the thing is he survived. So, you know, hooray.
That's right. Well, and so coming up next week, Adam, hopefully we'll be talking about a Seahawks victory over the Steelers.
Yeah.
On Sunday, and then...
Because I don't want to hear it from my brother-in-law, who's a Steelers fan.
Look,
I can't be having that.
There's one thing that I'm really interested to see, and because it has been since, I think, 2003, when the Steelers played at Seahawks, then Seahawks Stadium, we haven't seen quite how they travel in over 12 years now. I think this is a big game for Seahawks fans all season, so I expect a lot of Seahawks fans to show up, but I also know Steelers fans are going to travel this game, and it's going to be important that I don't want to see a whole lot of terrible towels. I know they're going to be there a little bit, but
let them wave them.
Let's hope the Seahawks get up ahead early and finish out this game.
Absolutely. And they can use those terrible towels to dry their tears. Let's hope for that. That's what I'm pulling for.
That's right.
So I think with that, Brandon,
there's only one thing left to say.
Yeah. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.